My name is Hector, and I'm a blessed and recovered alcoholic. What a ride up here. Never seen so many cows in my life. God brought me into this life May 26th of 2007. I took and I basically was living in my vehicle, was going through a divorce. My children were not that happy with me. I had taken and basically destroyed the relationship that I had, every relationship that I had had, due to drinking and other things. I came in here broken. I came in here with not enough money to eat. Came in here with sleepless nights, crying all the time. Just this pain that is very, very hard even to this day to take and to put into words. And one of the few places that I was able to take and find that peace and tranquility was in a meeting or in church. I kept hearing about hope. I kept hearing about this life that was laid out here. But the pain wouldn't go away. I think that in the first 3.5 years of my life in this program, all I did was learn how to suffer. Later on, you know, the God of my understanding is, his sense of humor is never my sense of humor. You know, I learned here that I needed to go through that pain because I had given it out so freely. I had taken and I had treated and mistreated so many people. I had disregarded so many other people. So God took and I was in a meeting and I heard this gentleman speak at this meeting and his peace and tranquility. I had never heard another human being have that sort of peace and tranquility. And, you know, being the good alcoholic that I was, you know, I asked him for his number, but I didn't ask him to sponsor me. It took a while for that to happen because I was working with somebody else. And that person, every time I was going through what I was going through, he would always say, you know, try and help somebody else, you know, not realizing just the devastating pain that I was in. And I finally took and asked him to take and to guide me, to tell me what to do. And he said that I had to call the person that was sponsoring me and take and tell him that I was going to be working with him. And it wound up that he was his sponsor. So I took and we started on this journey. My sponsor, who's still my sponsor today, as long as I had a vehicle, he didn't drive. So I would pick him up. I would get his hazelnut black coffee with no sugar. And we would go out to meetings. And he instructed me that I was, that I knew nothing about this life. That if he wanted to find out about stealing and being unfaithful and all these other things, that then he would, you know, that then he would ask me. But until then, I was to sit in the front. I was to put my head between my legs and I was to listen because I knew nothing about recovery. So I spent the whole year, my whole first year like that. He took and he passed on this hope that's in the second page of our book, how, you know, hundreds of people have recovered from this hopeless state of mind. He took in the forward to the second edition. He told he pointed out to me how we can be permanently recovered, not partially recovered, but permanently recover by one alcoholic working with another ensures permanent recovery. So of course, I didn't really grasp any of this at the time, because my drinking and other things had taken and had kind of like dulled my mind. It takes a little bit for the fog to clear out. And slowly but surely, I think it was the second week that we had started working, he went into the doctor's opinion. You see, my sponsor showed me how important it is to read one chapter at a time, because you need time with a chapter so that you can fully understand what the writer is saying. And then he would stop in certain passages of whatever he was reading, and he would explain it to me like I was a kindergarten student, and that's what I needed. See, he showed me how much hope there is in the doctor's opinion, how no matter that my parents, my brother, my sister, my ex-wife, my children, my friends, all of these people tried to get me to stop, I wouldn't stop. I may have stopped for a bit, but I couldn't stop. And then in that same, in that same paragraph is the third promise of our big book, that this program must have depth and weight if I am to take and remain here for the rest of my life. That the first time that the word must is used in the big book is in the doctor's opinion, that I must believe in a power greater than myself if I am to recreate my life. So again, it's going through this stuff, and I just couldn't believe all of this stuff that he was reading to me. But that phenomenon of craving, I could understand. That mental obsession, it's like I come from a family in which my mother told me that when she was pregnant, she would just drink beer because that was her craving. 17 of my aunts and uncles on my mother's side died as a direct result of alcoholism. So you see, but I didn't know this, and this doesn't make me an alcoholic. It really doesn't. I'm just letting you know what the track record that came behind me was. And I began to understand that it's not so much when I'm not drinking, it's what I'm thinking about when I'm not drinking. See, I'm thinking about, even though I may have been burnt a little, I'm thinking that this time I'll go into this place with a fire hose and I won't get burnt. And I always get burnt. I always wake up in places that I never thought I'd wake up, doing things that I never thought that I would do. So he was very, very precise on this thing. There was a lot of prayers, because I would call him up and I would tell him all of these things that were going on in my life. And it's like what it's like, that sometimes you take, and it was almost like I was talking to someone that wasn't listening to me, and all he kept saying at the end, whether it was through tears and everything else, he would say, "Hector, let's pray." And I found that, like, I kept saying to myself, he's just not hearing me. He doesn't understand what I'm saying. And then he took me through Bill's story. And he showed me how I could relate to a lot of the things that Bill went through. His alcoholic decline into alcoholism, how he would always say that, you know, the fear that I had in me sometimes that I was going to lose my family or lose my job, that wouldn't stop me. You know, the self-knowledge that I couldn't take a drink, that didn't stop me. It just didn't. I don't know what it was. It's just that I would tell myself these lies and I was the only one that believed them. You know, the destructiveness of this disease that I suffer from, you know, just wants me to believe these lies, wants me to walk into a room and say, hey, everybody's judging you. You're a piece of garbage, all of this stuff, you know, and I subscribe to that because there are things that happen when you're young that sometimes you don't tell anyone about. You refuse to deal with them. And they bring a lot of shame in your life, a lot of self-hatred in your life, and a lot of denial. So I already had a doctor's degree in denial very, very early. You know, I just refused to be truthful. I refused to be truthful. I took and he showed me how once Bill was removed from alcohol for the last time, he turned his will and his life over to the care of God. You know, how he wanted. Ebby had something that he wanted. You see, Ebby's feet were on different soil. So he broke that down for me. He said, that's what God allowed you to be attracted to me. See, because you heard something and felt something. So you see, I'm on different footing. And that's all about you wanting what somebody else has. And you're willing to go to any length, because that's the question that he would always ask, are you willing to go to any length to be free of this forever? And I didn't think that there was like a forever thing. But he explained to me, he said, Hector, where are we? I said, Sadiq, we're at the boardwalk in Jones Beach. And he said, this is forever. We're here together. This is all we have. It's this moment. We don't have yesterday. We don't have a little later from now. We have right now. That's what we have. See, that's what Bill talks about in the fourth dimension of existence. It's living in the right now. It's not destroying myself because I committed mistakes when I was drinking and doing other things. See, I don't need anybody to tell me that I'm a piece of garbage. I do a good job of that on my own. You know what I mean? I destroy relationships. You know, I take people hostage and then I blame it on them. See, because it's very, very hard to look in the mirror. But that's exactly what Bill does. See, Bill takes and he's removed from this for the last time. He's removed from this. And he takes and he turns his will and his life over to the care of God, because he knows that with God, he can't be truthful if there's no God involved. Can't. We can't. We're still going to say we're fine, even though the world is crumbling around us. See, but once I have that belief that what the God of my understanding can give to me is the same thing that he's given to my sponsor. You know? And he was willing to right all his wrongs. He was willing to go to people who he had hurt and take and make amends to them. And that always stayed with me. That always stayed with me that Bill, our co-founder, was willing to do all of this, the same way that Dr. Bob did it further on. That you read Dr. Bob's Nightmare and you see that he did the same thing. I never say that I have this. I always say that God's given me this. See, God's given me this life. Because when I don't bring God into the equation, then I'm another a liar, a cheater, and a fraud. Because then I say, I have this, like I've done this work. You know what I mean? So for me, it's very, very important. I was taught to always give the credit to who is giving you this life. So he took he took and he took me to through there is a solution, and there is a solution, not more than a solution. If you're going to do this work, if you're interested in living this life, you have to do this work. And do this work with people that are called in the book ex-problem drinkers. Uses words like were. Uses words like people in whom the problem has been solved. See that? But if you don't have a sponsor, who's going to point that out to you? If you think that you can read this textbook on your own, good luck. You can't. See, I never had a problem going to people to help kill me. But I have a problem raising my hand and saying I need help. Because again, I self-sabotage. I destroy things. I destroy me. And that's all I have to pass on in the beginning, is I know about destruction. I know about hatred. I know about anger. So he showed me how important that was, that I had a level, I had to level my pride. I had to give up on these things. I had to realize that instead of hating people, I needed to learn how to pray for people. And that's a hard concept. It's a hard concept. Very, very hard. My ex-wife had taken everything. Everything that I had, everything. My sponsor likes to joke. Of course, he would get my permission. He said, "My sponsee is the only person that I know that got a bank account that owed money." So that's what I did. I had to take and work and pay these people off, and I had to learn how to pray for her. Even though almost 19 years later, she still wants me to die, I still pray for her upon awakening and before I go to bed. See, it's easier to pray for people than to carry them with you. I can't carry nobody. I can't. I can't carry hatred either. It's not what God would have me do. He taught me that. In there is a solution, I find the answer that's going to take and stay with me for the rest of my life if I allow this God of my understanding to enter and guide my life. And more about alcoholism, I find all of the tragic things that I do. Even though things are bad, I make them worse. That's why he brought up the jaywalker, the one who constantly gets hit, but he doesn't see it because he can't. Because when I walk in here, I know that it's alcohol and that other thing that are my problems. That's what I think. But you see, my sponsor pointed out, he said, Hector, how many times had you stopped? And you still kept on doing the same thing. You still walked around with that anger, with that rage. with that hatred, with that shame, you still walked around with it. So apparently, those are your solutions. And again, I just stood there because, you see, when someone is taking, and he always said that he's not better than I am. It's just that God has him in a different place. See, it's not that he was speaking to me from the mountaintop. We were sitting right across from each other on a bench. And he was taken and he was telling me this. And then he would ask me questions. And those questions proved that what he had asked me was correct. What he had told me was correct. And then this is how his fourth step, his first step ended with me. This is how it ended. Sorry, I'll find it really quickly because I have everything highlighted pretty much. He pointed out that in the book, this is the only part that deals with the unmanageability of my life. He already dealt in the first four chapters, he dealt with my alcoholism. This is the unmanageability of my life. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional nature. We were afraid of misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't be of real help to other people. It was like bing, 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 bing. You know, it's like God allowed him to reveal the truth to someone that only knew the lie, that I couldn't sit back on the lie anymore. I just couldn't, you know. And he said that at the second step would take and reinforce this God of my understanding that I had picked up in the first step. Because he said I needed to find God if I was going to be useful. If I was going to stop beating myself up, I needed to find God in this first step, which of course I had. And right in the first paragraph of We Agnostic, it talks about how if I'm having trouble, the only thing that can save me is a God of my understanding who can conquer this. It says it, doesn't say it just that way, but that's what it means. And he showed me how I would take and how I would manipulate events and laugh at people that had a religious thing, that maybe they had picked up a prostitute, maybe they had robbed something. I pointed that out to say that these things really didn't work. You see, I was always picking things. I was always picking, but never really able to take and to look at my role in these things. You see, that's what a good sponsor will take and will point out to you. This book should become your personal walk in this life. That's what it should become, is a personal walk. Because any instructions that you need as an alcoholic or other things, because when God removed my alcoholism, he removed a lot of other things that were behind that. In his walk through the third step, he showed me how I had tried to manipulate my children because, you know, you have a good sponsor, you talk about a whole bunch of things that you've never spoken with anyone else. The first honest relationship I ever had with another human being is with that man. First honest relationship where I was able to tell him everything that had ever happened to me and all the things that I had done. And he showed me how I had manipulated people and places to try and get them to do what I wanted. And even then it didn't work out. And when it didn't work out, I became increasingly angry and blaming and doing all of these things. And he said the same thing that Bill says in Bill's story is that I had to get rid of self-centeredness. I had to stop thinking about myself. I had to stop that. And the only way I could get rid of that was to go back to that God of my understanding, because that's really the only way to get rid of that. See, I had to follow simple directions that were going to take and guide me to this new life. And in order to get to this new life, I had to be willing to take and to listen and to hear what was truly being said and not what I wanted to hear, because I didn't want to hear any of this stuff. See, I didn't want to know that my troubles were of my own making. See, because I was always pointing at other people. It was always their problem. It was the people at my job. It was my family. It was my family. It was everyone but me. But you see, when I was at that bar, there was no one but me. See, when I was living in my car, there was no one but me. So I had to look at causes and effects. I love the way Bill writes. I love the two words that he always puts together. He told me that I was to take and I was to go home and decide if I could take and do that third step prayer for the rest of my life. I wanted what he had. I did what he told me. He took and he instructed me on what to do in the fourth step. You know, when you feel comfortable with a person and you're talking to that person a lot, you tell them everything. So for me to sit down and to write these things was just in 2 or 3 days, I had this thing done. See, I wanted to be free. He kept talking about freedom. He kept talking about this new life. And I wanted to stop hating myself. I wanted to stop thinking that other people needed to love me so that I could be whole. He came over I went and picked him up, but we came over to the place that by that time a friend of mine had allowed me to take and live in their basement for free. You know, another God thing. I sat down and I told him everything, but before I even opened my mouth, he told me his. Wow. Wow. He was a person who I thought had never done anything wrong. He was a person who had, when we met, I think he had 20 or 21 or 22 years, something like that. I thought he had done none of this. You know, I thought that, you know, he may have had a few beers, he may have done a few things, but I didn't think any of that. And for me to tell him all of these things was nothing. You know, he gave me direct instructions directly from the big book. I was to take and I was to make five columns. I was to list the person, I was to list the cause and what it affected, and I was to take and to look at it from a different angle. And what could I have done differently? He asked me to take and to make a fear list. He gave me direct instructions as to how to make them. And then he took and he gave me these instructions. He said, "You're going to make 10 columns going across. I said, "Well, what 10 columns?" He said, "Well, first you're going to put the person's name, and then this is the sexual inventory. This is what it breaks down to be. This is how simple it is. The first column is the person. The second column is where have I been selfish? The third is where had I been dishonest? The fourth is where had I been considerate? The fifth is whom did we hurt? Did I unjustly arouse suspicion, jealousy, bitterness? Where was I at fault? And the last one, what could I have done differently?" Now, is that something that sounds terrifying? Didn't sound terrifying to me. So I listed all of these things. I asked God to remove all my fears. And that's how this thing works. Then I wasn't carrying all of this self-hatred. I wasn't carrying all of this garbage that I thought that I was. You see, it's a wonderful way of getting all of this out here that I've held inside for so long. All of this number two that I kept on stirring and saying it doesn't smell that bad anymore. Know what I mean? I just didn't want to carry this anymore. And I just wanted to take and to feel this love, this superhuman love that he kept speaking about. Went through this and then he gave me this list. I'm going, what the hell is this? He gave me 144 character defects, shortcomings. He said, "How many of those can you identify with?" Looked at him like, "What?" And then I started to read the list. Gossiping. Deceitful. I wish I had brought the list with me. Wow. I thought that it was bad enough to tell him all these other things. Now I had to sit there and look at all these other things that I had. So he said that that I had to take and I had to ask God to remove these things that we could go over things, but I needed to take and I needed to pray and ask God to remove them because nowhere in the big book does it say your sponsor removes these things from your life. It says that God removes them. Then the shortcomings, because as he taught me, if I have one, I have the other. he explained it to me. He says, "Look, you're sitting there and your head is up now. Your head isn't down, listening, and you see something that doesn't belong to you." He says, "That's a character defect." Says, "You wanting to take it, that's a shortcoming." So I had a lot of them. And slowly but surely, I would get down, still to this day, by the grace of God. My feet never touch the bed unless I take, and I have these little conversations with God before my feet hit the ground, because I want God to guide me. I don't, heck, this is a train wreck. Hector can't do this anymore. And so he let me take a couple of weeks to take and find out the meanings of a lot of these things and to pray. And again, I thought, I'm clear of this now. Everything's going to be good. And then we went into 8 and 9. 8 and 9 is where I face all of these people that I've taken and had a huge role in them disliking me. And I have to go to people that I borrowed stuff from without them knowing me. And this is not an I'm sorry pill. This is not that. This is going to people and telling them what you've done and asking for their forgiveness. And the last thing you say is, "How can I make it right?" A lot of people said, "I hope you die." And I had to be okay with that, because once I say, "How can I make it right?" I never say another word. I don't even say thank you. I just walk away. My ex-wife was particularly devastating on me, but I stood there because I needed to stand there. Because if I was ever going to have a chance at a relationship with another human being, I had to hear that pain that I had caused her. See, just because I'm not drinking anymore doesn't mean that I'm free and clear. If I don't clean up the past will come back and get me. I'll drink again. I had to go to these people. And to a person that's having problems getting food, the thought of paying people is a very, very hard concept to grasp. My sponsor says, "Hector, it's their money. You're just returning what you stole. It's not your money, it's their money." So I made the best arrangements that I could and I started paying them. And I looked up and all of the paying was gone. I had paid everyone back that I had borrowed stuff without them knowing it. I was going through some other stuff that some legal issues. And I had gone to him and I had told him, and he had come to court with me. And the federal government offered me the opportunity of not going to jail. Not going to jail, not being a felon. All they wanted me to do was to take and to say that another person was involved. Just say that. Just say that. So we got out of that courtroom and they made that offer to me in the hallway. And my sponsor was there and my lawyer was there. And we went downstairs. My lawyer went one way and we went the other way. And he said, "Hey, that's a good offer." I said to him, "Sadiq, it looks like I'm going to jail. Can't implicate anyone else." Where those words came from, I don't know. I don't know where those words came from. I don't know. But I had to pay for the things that I had done. How is God going to change me if I kept on blaming other people? If I kept getting off scot-free? There were some people that I couldn't, because you may not be able to make amends to everyone. So my sponsor had me take and give food to the homeless for Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's Eve. There was one person that I thought I would never be able to make amends to. Never. Because he would give you postcards. He would give you like these 2x4 little cards, and you would write the person whether you were willing to go to them. I put down never. So I take and I we finish this work. 10 is where I take, and I look daily at why I should shut my mouth and not give my opinions, because now I don't want to hurt nobody, because now I don't want to keep on apologizing to people. You see, where I come from, a closed mouth gathers no moth. I don't have to apologize to you if I never say anything. Takes a lot of pain for you to shut your mouth, though. So I decided that I was through with that sort of pain. I learned how important it was to keep silent. Then I could learn something. Then I could see something, because God always uses other people to take and show me how to live and how not to live. See, I go into Walmart. I walk out with a bag with a receipt. I see two cops dragging somebody else out. That person showing me that maybe I should pay for the things that I take. See, but I have to be aware of all of these things. People drive crazy on the roads. They teach me how to drive safely. See, but I have to be conscious of these things. And that's where 11 and 12 come into your life. It's the consciousness that the God of my understanding puts in my life now that allows me to take and wake up and ask God to guide me during the day. At night, thankful that I walked through another day, that I didn't harm nobody, that maybe my wife said something to me in a way that I might have taken it wrong. And I want to, I don't say nothing. Because I was taught that there are only two roads in this program, the road of happiness and the road of righteousness. And my sponsor told me, if you pick the road of righteousness, you need to find another sponsor, because I don't know that road. I know the road of happiness, which brings a lot of tears, but it'll bring you a lot of joy also. I choose that. I choose that road every conceivable day. Every conceivable day, I choose that road. My wife and my sister, they're right. I live with them, they're right. I'm happy. My wife picked out my clothes. I'm okay with it. She picked up. I'm okay with it. She said, "All those socks don't look good." I had my shoes, took them off, put the socks on. See, I have to conform. That's what I have to do. I have to learn how to conform to this life. And whether I want to be happy or I want to be right. That's what this is. That's all this is. So I went from living in my vehicle with all the rags that I had, praying for my daughter for 13 years until she came back into my life, never saying nothing to her. She needed something, I gave it to her. Never said, "Oh, look at that. Dad's got a year. Dad. None of that. I let God soften her heart. I just stood there being a power of example on how God can change your life. Now we have a friendship. Now we have an understanding. Now she's back in my life. I lived the greatest life that I ever thought that I could live. I have things today that I never thought I wanted. And God's given me that. But it's by being obedient. See, in my house, if I want to be right, then I'm on the couch. If I keep my mouth shut, I'm in that nice bed that I bought. Came down here 4 years ago without a dog. Now we got four of them. They teach me about real love, because animals really love you when you take care of them. And you see, now I have love to give. My sponsor said when we were done, he said, "Hector, you have to pass this on." So that's what I do. I go to this rehab place called the Men's Healing Place. I read with people there. People come over to my house. We read in my house, in my front porch. Sometimes people only want me to take them to the fourth step. That's where I take them to. If you don't want this, I'm not God. I don't call people. I don't call to tell you, "Hey, where's your fourth step?" Because now I gave you some work. Now you don't even go to the meetings I go to. Now you don't pick up the phone. Now you don't come by anymore. What's that telling me? It's telling me I got to move on and help somebody else. And that's what this life is about. God can do for you what you could never do for yourself. That's all this is. I serve a God that's taken me to places and allowed me to live a way of living that I could have never known existed. The greatest drink or other thing that I've ever done has never made me feel the way I feel today. You see, I'm in an honest relationship with a woman that I married. Does she drive me crazy? Yes, she does. But then I always have to ask myself, do I want to sleep on the couch or do I want to sleep on the bed? So I get over it. She asked me questions that sometimes I never answer, because I would come out in a very, very disrespectful way. So sometimes it takes me a month to answer a question she might have asked me. Because I need this power greater than myself to take and to put those words in my mouth. Mm-hmm. that I think that that's the greatest gift that I've received here, is the ability to stay quiet, is the ability to lose that righteousness. It's the ability to walk into stores, and it doesn't matter if people are following me or not, I'm paying on the way out. You know, it's the ability to walk into my house and see that everything that's in there has sweat on it, because I have receipts for it now. You know, that's a great gift, that I never buy somebody else's misery. You know, I see people in Richmond taking and asking for money. I give them food, but I won't give them money. See, I'm willing to help, but I'm not willing to allow you to kill yourself with my dime. See, I guess I'll end with this. One of the greatest gifts that God has ever given me is this simple word called empathy. That I feel your pain. I don't want to be the one who caused it. My name is Hector, and I'm a blessed and recovered alcoholic. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Hector.